evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, October 12, 2017. A conference aimed at getting more oil companies to invest in South Sudan wraps up in Juba.
We look forward to working in coordination with our neighbors to build modern oil and gas industries that take into account important considerations such as developing a national workforce and allocating resources for domestic use.
And Dongle lawmakers propose dividing the state into two.
I don't see the meaning of division nowadays in South Sudan all over. I can mention it appears with no meaning because whenever you divide the main city, the issue of borders, our people will catch up with borders. That is the side effect of it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan government officials say the country is open for business and are encouraging oil and gas companies to invest despite the many challenges they face in a country where nearly 4 years of fighting continues. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, where President Salva Kiir was noticeably absent from a two-day energy conference.
At the start of a two-day conference in Juba organized by Africa Oil and Power and South Sudan's Petroleum Ministry, Vice President James Wani-Iga encouraged oil investors to come to South Sudan and announced the government's plans to venture into gas production.
We look forward to working in coordination with our neighbors to build modern oil and gas industries that take into account important considerations such as developing a national workforce, investing in technical training, knowledge, transfer, promoting indigenous companies, building infrastructure, and allocating resources for domestic use.
Iga is calling oil business owners to invest in large-scale power projects, including gas, and to allocate the power resources so that South Sudanese could benefit from such projects. South Sudan currently produces about 130,000 barrels of oil per day, which is a fraction of the 500,000 barrels a day it produced in 2011 when it declared its independence from Sudan. The vice president says the government hopes to increase oil production to 290,000 barrels per day by the year 2018. South Sudan Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lolgatkwoth says the government is working on a pilot project in gas exploration. He also says the government is trying to establish 4 oil refineries and by 2020 hopes to produce 120 barrels of oil a day. Fighting still continue in parts of South Sudan between government forces, rebel groups loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar, and various armed groups that have emerged since the 2015 peace deal was signed. Gatkwasa says the government is putting all efforts into ensuring that investors are given maximum security protection around the country, particularly in the Dar Petroleum Operating Company, or DPOC, and the Greater Pioneer Operating Company, or GPOC.
In all the areas, especially SPOC, GPOC, and DPOC, we want to maintain security. And for your information, all the blocks that I'm actually telling you, they are all 100% protected. The security is 100%. For those who are always questioning the issue of security and your safety and the safety of your workers as a company, rest assured that they will be protected.
Gascos says South Sudan is also looking for alternative routes to transport its crude oil to the international market. South Sudan relies solely on Sudanese pipelines for its oil exports, which Gascos says limits its production potential. NJ Ayuk, executive director of Centurion Law Group, a West African company, says African governments must ensure the peace and stability of outside investors in South Sudan before companies would be willing to send personnel and equipment to the country.
Investment is important, but investment has to be protected. We cannot welcome people in Africa if we don't create an enabling environment for them to invest, be protected, and continue to invest.
The global conference is aimed at providing a platform for African countries and companies to describe their needs and concerns to South Sudanese officials. Ministers, oil and gas company executives, and African entrepreneurs attended the meeting. Some of the major stakeholders are China National Petroleum Corporation, or CNPC, and Petronas, National Oil Company, NilePet, and its joint ventures, the Dar Petroleum, Sud Petroleum, and Greater Pioneer Operating Consortia are some of the participants at the conference. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Lawmakers in Jonglei State Assembly want to partition Jonglei into two states. The lawmakers unanimously passed a resolution to create the new states of Bor and Jonglei. President Salva Kiir divided former Jonglei State into four states in 2015. Some residents of Bor say the division will create discrimination and are asking the lawmakers to withdraw their petition. Jonglei State now consists of Duke, Twitch East, and Bor counties. But lawmakers think the area should be divided into Bor and Jonglei states. Philip Thonyuk is a member of parliament who represents Bor Town in the state legislative assembly, supports the change, saying the population and landmass would allow for the creation of a new state, which would create more funding for the area.
The population of Jonglei State is 513,250. Jonglei State is disadvantaged by equity distribution of funds to the 32 states. Jonglei State is spaced out at approximately 280 kilometers from south to north. That makes it difficult for one administration to secure and manage.
Josh McQuay represents Tweech South constituency in the Jonglei State Assembly. McQuay says President Salva Kiir should consider the rights of the people of Jonglei.
The president has to consider this thing as he is the president of people. And the people whom he is ruling, they are the ones who demand this. So we have to consider the right of his people. In terms of economic viabilities, we have agriculture, we have River Nile, which is the source of everything, and we have subterranean, like oil under the ground. So with all these things, we are qualified to be a state.
35-year-old Bor Town resident Abraham Aliu opposes dividing Jonglei into two states because he believes it would encourage conflict and discrimination.
I don't see the meaning of division nowadays in South Sudan all over. I can mention it appears with no meaning. Because whenever you divide the main city, the issue of borders, our people will catch up with borders. That is the side effect of it.
Bor Town resident Duat Dao agrees.
We are having 32, but the facilities are not 100% to the people. Let us see this thing, whether we will develop them or not. We don't want to be in two states. This one state is good for us as people of Jonglei.
But Bor Town resident Abraham Malual welcomes the idea of dividing into two states, arguing it will bring more employment opportunities to the area.
If the town has been taken to people by the president, Salva Kiir, president has did it right, because that's what they were been saying with his colleague, Dr. Garang, and the rest of the people which are actually gone. That's what people are in need of. South Sudan in need of so many states.
Presidential spokesman Atenuak Aten says Mr. Kiir has yet to receive the petition, but says creating more states is not a high priority at the moment.
Should it come at any time, the party, the right, the people of Jonglei State to request whatever state they want, but the presidential priority now is how to return the country to normalcy. It is not about how many states should exist.
Weck says the president will decide what to do when the petition, once it reaches his desk. That report was compiled by Deng Gai Deng in Bor, Jonglei State. South Sudanese citizens and foreign nationals are complaining about poor services at Juba International Airport. Repairs have been ongoing at the airport for at least a year now. Travelers report being forced to sit or stand under hot tents before taking their flights. Others complain about poor hygiene and sanitation at the airport, describing it as a shameful place that tarnishes the country's image. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Some travelers say Services at Juba International Airport have deteriorated considerably compared to the time before South Sudan seceded from Sudan. Juba resident Betty Miller says the plastic tents that are used as a waiting and a departure lounges are hot and extremely uncomfortable. Miller says hundreds of travelers are often left standing in the hot tents because there are not enough seats.
I faced it rough because the heat was too much. And when you see also from behind where the place for the washroom, the water flows, comes towards where we, the travelers, are sitting or standing.
South Sudanese national Harriet Mubarak says she feels embarrassed when she sees the poor services at what supposed to be an international airport and a gateway to the country. After traveling to several other countries and seeing other airports, Mubarak believes the government must do more to improve the airport service in Juba.
Everyone is there. The luggages are all over the place. Even the screening machines, I don't think they're even operating properly, because sometimes you just see somebody passing their bags, or sometimes they just ask you to move with the bag. Other people, they try to really like screen their bags or even check inside what they have.
Another South Sudanese national who prefers to be identified only as Sarah says customer care services at the airport is extremely poor.
They look sad. They look angry. They seem frustrated. Sometimes it's just by the disorder. You'll see sometimes the lines are not organized. You don't know which line you should be in. Or maybe you are in line and someone is brought in front of you and served ahead of you.
Sarah says South Sudanese airport management and personnel need to follow the simple rule of maintaining order, respecting others, and keeping the airport clean.
You'll find that the hygiene conditions are just completely in a mess. You'll find in most cases that there are no sanitation facilities. Just from my experience as a mother, I've had situations where I did need to change my baby, and I did not have the proper space to do that, and I felt really frustrated.
Brigadier General Kur Kwal Ajio, director of Juba International Airport, admits services at the airport are poor, but says authorities are working to complete renovations of the lounges and extension of the terminal.
We have to tell the public to just endure with us, with the situation people are in the tents, but we want to do best so that they get to be comfortable. And I really appreciate their patience.
Kwal says construction is underway for larger areas of departure and arrivals, as well as the construction of four new lounges. Kwal says he does not know when the construction will be completed. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kenyan police put down opposition protests with tear gas. Find out where when we come back.
South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about what is happening in their country. This week, South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza engages the diaspora in a spirited discussion about what South Sudanese should do to bring peace in their country.
Unity is possible when we stop the hate.
What are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
The voices of the diaspora on ending the conflict in South Sudan. This week on South Sudan in Focus.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which African country do you admire most?
I admire Nigerians. They are very bold and they are go-getters.
I admire DRC Congo because of their music. They perform the best of music ever in Africa. Even though you don't understand what their language, but you admire their music.
I admire Ghana. It's my country, it's my motherland. Moreover, the culture of Ghanaians are unique. We are also very, very hospitable.
I love my country, South Sudan, and I'm so proud of it, despite of the ongoing ups downs.
I admire Botswana because Botswana is a good country, is a cool country. You know, they don't have this other corrupt, other things that are happening in other countries. They're like just like Switzerland in Europe, yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese in the diaspora say building trust among various communities could bring peace. Community leaders and activists in the U.S. say the image of the Juba government is that certain communities in the country enjoy resources at the expense of the other communities. My colleague John Tanza holds a roundtable discussion with the diaspora on the importance of diversity and trust building among South Sudanese.
If we are looking for a leader that has a vision that will actually lead us into a very good promise, this leader has to really, really lay out a very clear vision that it is for the benefit of almost everybody in Southern Sudan that this government has to go. It is not just very simple.
Yeah, but someone listening to us will say we cannot be blaming the government for everything. We have a role to play, and what is that role?
Can I interject really quick?
Sure, again, sure, Atem, Jacob Atem. Come in, Jacob Atem.
So, Akeem, the John is right. Here's the problem. I actually was listening to you thinking you told us diagnose the problem, and right there you clearly missed the point, because let me be practical. I think we, the so-called 64 tribe, or maybe more, are misdiagnosing the problem. If people think just because Alpha Kid is a Dinka is a problem, that person is wrong. We need to look objectively. Yes, I will tell you an example. I'm a Dinka, okay? I don't agree with every single thing that he does. But just to remind you, there are critical other 64 tribe elites with Alpha Kid. What do you do with these people? So that's why I said, let's say the government has no tribe, but our problem we diagnose are these XLM elites. The moment we take out what we call the tribal lenses, the better we actually going to diagnose the problem.
This is
Galwak. Yes, go ahead, Galwak.
Well, thank you, John. You know, I wanted to interject here. You know, for us to be able to move forward, South Sudanese must start to be honest to the discussion. Yes, Dinka in general do not support what Salva Kiir is doing. But it's also at the same time, you can also say that Salva Kiir in existing has been using Dinka as a tool to achieve whatever he actually wanted to see happen. There are some other tribes in there. You know, I can say, for example, there are a number of Nuer with him. There are a number of Squatrian with him. It is lack of leadership.
Who is that? Who is
what
that
I talking? Think is,
yes, that's Galwak. Galwak is talking to us.
Yes.
Galwak, I want to say, what do you make of Taban? If you think it's
I say to you, Jacob, that Taban, yes, has been used by Sulfur as a tool.
But that's what I'm saying. He's not a Dinka. That's why I'm saying.
And he also used the majority of
them, right?
As a tool.
That's why I'm saying we are misdiagnosing the problem. So,
right.
How about Waniga? And in fact,
and that's what, you know, if you look back to what I just say, I say there are some Equatorian, there are some Nuer. And there are also a majority of Dinka that have been used by itself as a tool.
No,
and if
what I want to reject, my brother, this is the problem. Actually, in fact, the Dinka, the small proportion Dinka he's using, we know Matianganyor, they're not all Dinkas, okay? But this is the problem. What do you make of Waniga? What do you make of Lamoro? What do you make of Taban? What do you make
But anyway, let me complete what I was trying to say.
I think Jacob,
if you can get my
give,
point
let's
here,
let's give time to Galwak to continue with his point. It will come back to you,
yes.
Jacob.
I think I don't want to take us back much to this. I wanted to go to what Kim was saying earlier, that in order for us to have a peace, we can really just look for solution. We have to look for what happened that brought us to here where we are. I think what happened that brought us to where we are was discussed and already defined in that document that was actually chaired in 2015. If you look into African study that was done by the former president of Nigeria, if you look into some of the discussion that also included into the peace the CPA 2 that was signed in Addis Ababa, you will find out that issues that brought us to where we are today were already tackled on that thing. If we were honest enough and took that document and implemented honestly, I think it could have brought us to the foundation. It is very difficult to see how you can bring South Sudanese together now without thinking of where to begin. Because I think we will never get into 100% without beginning from 1%. And where do we begin to start trusting one another? Because unless we have trust, and we don't have that, we don't have any trust now among the South Sudanese. This is not only the government, the politician, the civil society, all of us. We have to be honest. We do not have that. We have lost it. Now, how do we regain it? We have to start somewhere.
Sarah, I will leave you with that question. How do we regain the trust? Galwak is raising a very important issue that business is no longer as before, where someone from Kapoita can sit next to somebody from Bentiu and business is as usual. It's gone. So how do we regain the trust?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the division is there, and it has become really deep. And to regain the trust, I think we should start giving us ourselves some chance. As people were talking about the in terms of the majority and the makeup of the government, it is a question that I have always been asking, and maybe many others. We always see that the makeup of the government is the leadership is a Dinka, followed by a Nuer and someone from Equatoria. So if we have these three people, that is the diversity. But no, even Jacob earlier mentioned that there are some elites. But if you look at the elites, who are these elites? Are they the 64 tribes there? I don't think they're there. We have to embrace diversity.
Is it possible to have a government with 64 tribes all represented? That's a long shot.
It doesn't have to be 64 tribes represented, but there has to be some diversity there. You cannot just have a domination of one tribe. Unfortunately, that's the truth that many people don't want to accept. And if we don't accept the truth, then we're not going to be able to solve the problem.
South Sudanese in the diaspora talk about leadership in South Sudan. Tomorrow, they discuss the importance of unity among South Sudanese leaders with my colleague, John Tanza. Kenyan police lobbed tear gas at protesters on Wednesday, a day after opposition leader announced he was withdrawing from the rerun of the presidential election because he doesn't believe it will be free or fair. At least 17 people have been admitted for injuries sustained in the opposition stronghold of Kisumu, as demonstrators are demanding electoral reform clashed with police. Mohammed Yusuf has this report for VOA from Kisumu in western Kenya.
Lucas Otieno is in pain and his bed is soaked in blood. The 24-year-old boat welder says he was caught in the Wednesday demonstrations in Kisumu in western Kenya on his way to work. Before I got to my place of work, I met police officers at the bridge. They started throwing tear gas, then people started running. I stopped at the Kondele market, then I felt pain. I touched, then I saw blood. A bullet hit his genitals and lodged in his groin, he says. Otieno's father, Moses Odingo, is angered by his son's injuries.
You cannot have a situation where you just shoot aimlessly at helpless people who are not even involved in the demonstrations. And Kisumu now has become like the Wild West, where people are learning to shoot.
Opposition supporters clash with police in the Kondele area in Kisumu County. Families of the injured and protesters have accused the police of using live bullets to quell the riots, an accusation denied by the police. In the main hospital in Kisumu, few doctors and nurses are available to attend to the injured, some of whom have been here for hours without treatment. Eric Odhiambo, who sells second-hand clothes, says police assaulted him at his place of work. I was hiding in my shop. Police were chasing some of the demonstrators and they realized someone was hiding in the shop. They entered and started beating me with a baton. They broke my left hand and I have not got treatment. I was told to come back tomorrow. Odhiambo was one of the dozens of injured waiting for treatment at the biggest hospital. Dr. Juliana Otieno works at the Jaramogi Odinga Hospital. She says they have received patients with serious injuries.
There were 23, by 6:30, and three were gunshots. The rest were other injuries. Three were gunshots, the rest were other injuries. Yeah, there were treatment. One or two was to go to theater, so they were still being prepared. The gunshots are the ones that were to go to theater.
Political tensions continue to climb in Kenya ahead of the rerun presidential election on October 26th. Opposition supporters took to the streets of major cities Wednesday to demand that electoral officials who were blamed for irregularities in the August election step down immediately. On Tuesday, opposition leader and presidential candidate Raila Odinga pulled out of the October polls, citing grievances with the Electoral Commission and President Uhuru Kenyatta's ruling party. The opposition has vowed to continue with the protest till their demands are met. Opposition supporters say they will take to the streets for more demonstrations. But for Lucas Otieno, the welder, a long night awaited him at the hospital as doctors prepare to remove the bullet. He likely has a long road to recovery ahead. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Kisumu, Kenya.
The International Organization for Migration says there has been a dramatic drop in the number of migrants from West Africa crossing the Sahel region into Niger on their way to Europe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Migration officials attribute the drop in African migration to strong action by the government of Niger against human smuggling networks. The International Organization for Migration reports Niger has closed 3 of 6 transit houses in the town of Agadez, where migrants often stop on their journey. IOM Niger Chief of Mission Giuseppe Lopret says migrants used to wait in the houses for smugglers' vehicles to take them to Algeria or Libya.
Many vehicles have been withdrawn by the army along the migratory routes. Smugglers have been arrested. So all these created a context, sent across a message that transiting Agadez is not easy, it's not that easy.
Lopret tells VOA fewer migrants are arriving and staying in Agadez because of the difficulty in finding smugglers to take them to North Africa.
Last year, the first 6 months, we were estimating 5,000 to 7,000 migrants transiting per week going to Algeria or Libya. Right now, our numbers show that we have 5,500 migrants per month transiting, so there's definitely less migrants.
While the Agadez route is drying up, Loprat says, migration to Europe is not. He says smugglers are finding alternate, possibly more dangerous routes to transport their human cargo. He says Africans desperate to carve out a better life for themselves in Europe continue to risk their lives, making the perilous journey across the Sahel and eventually across the Sahara Desert. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Never to Share You with Somebody by Teresa Nyankole.
Never to share you with someone. I'm so glad to see you. So glad to meet you. To see you again, 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 and again.
We've been listening to Teresa Nyankole with the song Never to Share You with Somebody. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can check us out on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.